Hey, folks, today's guest is John Welborn, 10-year NFL veteran, founder of CrossFit Football, and founder of the Power Athlete Training System. Before we dig into that, here's a word from our sponsor.
This episode of the Paleo Solution podcast is sponsored by Sleep Cocktail. You've heard Rob and Dr. Kirk Parsley talk about sleep and the Sleep Cocktail product in previous episodes. I recently spoke with Leah, a Sleep Cocktail customer in Atlanta, Georgia, who has had trouble sleeping for over 10 years. Oh wait, you're probably wondering who I am. I'm Nikki, Rob's better half.
I'm like, what is this stuff? So I was reading about it, and you know, it says, you know, within 30 minutes. And I'm like, oh, come on, really? And sure enough, like, I time it, and I drink it, and I feel fine. And within 30 minutes, I'm asleep. And I'm asleep for the entire night. And I feel great when I wake up the next morning.
Leah shared how for years she's relied on pharmaceutical sleep aids, since her early 20s. She didn't want to take them, and often tried not to.
You've been lying in bed for 4 hours, you are wide awake, there's no end in sight, but if you take Ambien at 2 o'clock in the morning and you have to be up at 6, you're going to feel like a train ran over you. Another benefit of the sleep cocktail I find, no matter how long I have to sleep, say if I do drink it at 11 or 12 and I have to be up at 5 or 6 or 7, 8, 9, it doesn't matter. Like, I wake up feeling fine. Another thing that's been nice, especially on vacation this week, I've kind of tested out, see, like, how long will I sleep if I don't have to get up? And it's been pretty consistent that I get 9 hours, 9.5 hours. Like, I can't recall. I mean, it has been 10 years maybe since I have been able to sleep 9 hours, 9.5 hours. I can't even recall sleeping that long in one night.
That's awesome. So. 9 hours of sleep. Could you use 9 hours of sleep at night? Go to sleepcocktails.com. That's sleepcocktails with an S. And use code ROBWOLF10 to save 10%.
So, John, what's new? What's exciting?
Nothing. Just, you know, living the dream, working with Power Athlete. You know, we finished up all the CrossFit football seminars for the year. And so we ended those in November with one in New Zealand. And I came home and we're basically just been really just trying to ramp up and get our own house in order with Power Athlete. And then we have the symposium where we bring in all of our, you know, heavy hitters and, you know, good friends and everybody that's really contributed and been part of our, you know, Power Athlete family. And we bring them at the end of the year and we just have a, you know, symposium, bring in some great speakers like Rob Wolf and Tom Inkledon's coming in, and then Andy Stump's coming in to talk about leadership and a few things. And so we're doing that. And so I got that really going. And, you know, Kate's 24 weeks pregnant, so
sweet,
with a little boy.
Nice.
So we got the baby coming. And just for the most part, everything's been going really good. And, you know, and then also we launched the Talk to Me Johnny book, which has been years in the making today, which I was pretty stoked about. We've been working on it for a long time. I just never really could grasp or understand the amount of work that goes into producing the production of a book, let alone an ebook, which should be easier theoretically.
Well, yeah, it's it definitely opened my eyes that it wasn't the easiest thing in the world. But some people seem to, you know, pop them out like the way rabbits produce offspring, but it's certainly not me.
Well, it's
interesting in that it's just a lot of production work. It's a lot of refining and kind of arranging it and getting it together. So especially for the Talk to Me Johnny book, which spans 5 years.
Right.
And I think it was right over 1,000 pages, depending on the reader you looked at. I mean, one of the readers, it was like 2,000. So it's 1,000 pages, which is pretty dense. There were like several hundred blog posts in there. But when I really looked at you know, like why I started Talk to Me Johnny and how it all kind of, you know, came about. It was this idea of just answering people's questions that were emailing me on CrossFit Football, and then realizing, like, you know, that there was this evolution for me, especially where, you know, people always ask, like, hey, like, what is Power Athlete and where did it come from? And I was like, actually, it kind of came from Talk to Me Johnny, because I got so many emails of being like, so what would the training look like if there was no CrossFit in the CrossFit football? Or what did your training look like when you were playing in the NFL? Or more importantly, you know, I have a very specific goal, which is to run faster, jump higher, lift heavier weights. And, you know, as I started working and helping people on, like, you know, providing that information, I was like, why don't we just, like, create something that really meets this need? And that was Field Strong. And, you know, the Field Strong program, and people have had some really great results. And then from there, we had people that were like, hey, man, I just want to bang some fucking weights and be jacked. And I was like, well, I got that training. So we got the Jack Street. And then I had people, you know, really out of the training that I wrote for you, Rob, was really the Grindstone, which was for that, like, you know, corporate warrior, that guy slugging out 60 hours a week that still wants to make gains, but, like, doesn't really have the time. So the focus or the training has to be, like, extremely focused and, you know, like, very pinpoint accuracy. So it was just really fortunate to have everything kind of play out the way it has.
Oh, it's awesome. You know, we've talked before on my show. I've been on your show a couple of times, and it's definitely been a little bit of a moving target getting my training pinned down, trying to be competitive in jiu-jitsu, trying to figure out the recovery, you know, limitations of being 43 and two kids and all that type of stuff. And you have really put together some great stuff for me. I ended up doing that 2-day template that you put together. I do a little bit of work out of the gymnastics bodies programming, like a lot of their trunk work and mobility, particularly thoracic mobility, and I'm able to drop that stuff in, like, throughout the day. I kind of use them as movement snacks, so I get some of that stuff done, you know, while I'm working, and then I'll get into the gym maybe 2 days a week, and then doing rolling as often as possible. But it's been really effective for me. Like, I you know, the gains are not stratospheric at this point, but I keep making some incremental progress and just not backsliding. And that's pretty huge at this point.
Well, I think, you know, where people get a little kind of off the road, I think is a good way to put it, or where they get a little fucked up, is they assume that every day they go into the gym, they have to burn it down. It has to be this epic session, that you have to go in there and, you know, make all this, and anything less is either unacceptable. So they're missed training days because they know they don't have the time and the effort. And I remember hearing people kind of tell me this, and I go back to the analogy that I always used in training camp in the NFL, and people always ask me what training camp was, and I was like, honestly, it's a lot like just moving dirt. Like, you have this, like, big pile on one side, and every day you got to come out, and some days you get a shovel, and some days you get a spoon. But, you know, as long as you keep moving the dirt and you don't have an off day, you usually can get to the end of training camp. And, like, I don't think people had any fucking idea what I was talking about. And so when I talked about training, especially, is I was like, you know what, like, some days you're going to have these, like, amazing, amazing training days and, you know, performance days, and other days are just going to suck. And it's like, you just have to be able to persevere and just keep moving in that direction. And if you just, like, don't give up and don't bring your spoon or don't go to the gym or don't train, then you didn't get to move any dirt that day. And it just kind of was that kind of similar mindset. And it's like, you know, everybody wants everything and they always want everything to be all magical. And, like, you know, it just fucking, it doesn't happen. And especially when you got multiple kids and, you know, you're not 22 years old anymore and, you know, you got a business and a life, and it's just about being consistent and getting out there and doing it. And then, you know, being able to, like, pick your battles a little bit. I think that's the one thing that I've learned, especially in my own training, is I just got to pick my battles. Like, I got to see, like, where, like, all of a sudden we start training and all of a sudden I, like, you know, like, yeah, this is feeling fucking good today. And then that's the days you got to go for broke, and other days you're like, you know, I'm just going to survive today. And
right.
Just gonna be consistent with it. But, you know, I always wish we could all go back in time and live in this, like, perfect bubble where all we did was, like, train, lift weights, which was the bubble I lived in when I played in the NFL. And I didn't realize what a great bubble it was until after I retired. And I was like I started welted up, and people were like, why are you so sad? I'm like, you know, do you miss football? I'm like, no, I really miss the off season when I got paid to lift weights and train and, you know, eat and sleep as much as I could, and, you know, and then go work for 6 months. I always think that the productivity in this country would be fucking dramatically higher if you had to work 7 days a week for 6 months, and then you got 6 months off to go fuck around.
Right, right. Or you know, 7 days on, 7 days off, something like that, like some sort of split. Yeah, absolutely.
Well, if you told me, John, you got to work 7 days a week, like 8 to 10 hours a day for 6 months, but you're going to get 6 months off where you don't have to fucking do anything, I would gladly take that. I'd be like, no problem. Maybe I'll see you in 6 months, and I'll fucking be able to just chill out and do what I want. You know, it's just, I don't know. I mean, I'm really glad that I got that period of my life where I got to work really hard and I got a bunch of free time, because it allowed me to, like, you know, really do the things I want. I'm glad I got to do all that when I was in my, you know, 20s and early 30s, opposed from, like, all of a sudden you're like 50 years old and you're like, man, now I got the ability to go do some stuff, you know. It's you know, so I was glad I got to pick the battle I did.
Right. That's awesome. So, John, you know, you arguably, and I think anybody that's played at a high level, particularly in the NFL, you know, some of the best training methodologies around probably get applied to folks like you, and maybe you even more in particular because you just never really sat back and said, okay, this is good enough. Like you found Roth, you found Tom Inkledon, like you're always trying to find something new. How has that influenced the way that the girls are raised? You have twin girls. They're four now, four and a half.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, they just turned four October.
Okay.
Yeah, so
okay.
They just turned four.
So, I mean, how is that leading into the way that the girls do things? We hung out with you guys and they both swim like fish, which was incredibly impressive. But I mean, how is your background kind of influenced all that?
I think, you know, when you become a father, there's, this kind of, change in pace almost where like, you take a look and especially fathers of daughters, there's this kind of, and I always go back and I joke with my wife about it all the time, the Chris Rock one where he's like, you got one job as a father to keep your daughter off the pole. And like, so, I mean, there's this interesting deal where, you know, father of daughter, and I didn't really notice it until recently, but there's this like, you know, real interesting connection between fathers and daughters, and they're constantly looking for dad's approval, which is a little scary that they are, you know, not sure of themselves enough. To like, but maybe all kids are, but like they really always look for dad's approval. They do something and they always look back. And I can imagine the way that a girl might turn out if her dad either wasn't there, wasn't interested, or, you know, was stuck on his phone or wasn't involved. And so as the girls are getting older, that idea of like approval, we're like, you know, and I tell them all the time, I'm like, you guys are really good at this. You know, like, I'm really proud of you. And like, daddy loves you. And like, you know, try to give him as many hugs as you can, which is actually contrary to how I was raised, where, you know, I was treated with the malaise of a stray dog growing up. I think like maybe for boys, I think maybe that's like, you know, it's like, go out there and play and come back when it gets dark, whereas your daughter's a little bit more. But, you know, for me, you know, having grown up with all brothers and then also, you know, playing a game like the professional football where I was around no women, you know, like I didn't really have any kind of template or understanding. So just like any educated person, I bought some books. I went on Amazon and I looked and figured out like what some of the best selling father-daughter books were. And I bought a bunch of books and read about this idea of like, you know, raising a daughter. And like the one that really struck with me is like, you know, your job as a father is to arm your daughter with enough artillery and armor that she will be able to defend herself against douchebags like we are, you know? Right. And I was like, oh my God. So my job as a father is I have to provide my daughters with armor and artillery to avoid guys like me and us and like other. And I'm like, fuck, that makes so much sense. At that point, I was like, here's, you know, because I, you know, periodically I would meet girls that were extremely switched on, like really cool chicks that were like, you know, had, you know, really successful, just really nice, you know, had a good sense of humor, a lot of things. I always remember being like, man, did you have a great relationship with your father? And everyone was like, yes. And then you meet some of the other girls that I you know, ended up dating or running into, always had kind of a negative kind of association with their father. So at that point, I made this kind of constant kind of, or this understanding of being like, you know what, like, you know, you got to be your little girl's hero. You got to be able to protect her and look out for her and, you know, raise confidence in her. And, you know, and so that was important for me. And then the other one was, you know, sitting back, and I know you and I have both done this, but like, if you could draw up the perfect blueprint for your child and, you know, like, what would it look like? And thank God we are married to women that are as, well, they're a little bit crazier than we are. Because I remember talking to my wife.
Because they married us.
Well, yeah, 100%. Like I meet all these guys all the time that are like, oh, I can't get my wife on board with this. And I'm like, really? Because my wife's on board with everything. Like, you know, like, hey, what should we feed them for their first meal? What about like beef liver and egg yolks? Sounds great. We're in. You know, it's just a Chris Kresser thing. My wife was to the T. I mean, but like, you know, we sat back and looked and said, all right, you know, if there was a hierarchy of athleticism, what skills would I want to develop first in my girls? And I think, you know, being confident in the water and being able to kind of, you know, be able to navigate and move in water is important. Like the idea of like riding a bike or sliding, some form of skateboarding or surfing or snowboarding. And so the girls have like little skateboards and they ride bikes. And then like gymnastics, which is, you know, having read the gymnastics body and being a big fan of Chris Summers, like the work that he's done with kids is anything short of amazing and inspiring. So I looked at that. And so we looked around and found a really good gymnastics people, the Azarians, who the guy had won like a gold medal in the 50s. And he's got this huge factory. I think that's where that the Kayla girl, you know, who smirked on her face. That's where I think she came out of. And, you know, just trying to do like gymnastics. And then we got him in dance. And it's pretty hilarious that we go on Friday afternoons to dance. And my daughters are completely uninterested in dance, so we're going to go down the street here I think next month and join jiu-jitsu, the art of jiu-jitsu, which is I think it's the Mendez brothers, is right here in Orange County, Newport. So it's right down the street, actually next door to the dance studio. So like the girls weren't really that interested in dance, and we like were walking by and I was like, they were like, that looks like way more fun than that dance. I'm like, all right, we're going to jiu-jitsu. So nice. They'll you know, but like that idea of like you know, constantly you know, doing things that, you know, build up their self-esteem. And, you know, they really like to color. And so we sit down and I, you know, like they got me my own coloring book, so I color with them. But, you know, like I always think that, like, you know, the people that I've met that have, you know, especially women, like the ones that have been very successful always have a really good relationship with their father, which is actually kind of the opposite of some of the guys that I've met. Most of the guys that I know that are pretty successful kind of don't have a great relationship with their fathers. So it's kind of like, you know, I mean, it's funny. Like you go through all this thing and I always ask people, I'm like, oh, you know, like, did you have a great relationship with your mom and dad? And be like, nah, my dad was, you know, alcoholic. He was, you know, all these things. And I'm like, man, that's it's good. I'm like, I got to try to figure out how to crack that code. But no, I'm definitely excited to have a boy. And, you know, I, as I sat down and Luke, who works with me, he kind of put his chair back and he's like, you know, you have the opportunity to provide your son with a skill set that could be anything less than legendary if you wanted to. And I was like, what do you mean? He's like, well, think about it. You know, like what are the traits that you wish that you had in terms of like athletics, meeting girls, studying, all this other stuff? And I'm like, well, I wish I'd learned to play the guitar because I live next door to a dude in the dorms who could play the guitar that pulled chicks. We know about athleticism. He's like, yeah, so he'll be in good shape. He'll be a good athlete. He'll be good at sports, you know, computer programming, all these other things. He goes, you have the ability to sit back and fine tune those things. I'm like, yeah, but you provide it. But the one thing I've kind of learned a little bit about being a dad is you can't really force your kids into anything. You right. just have to provide opportunity. And you and I had a pretty good chat online. I kind of, when I learned out I was having a son, I kind of got stuck in a little bit of a rabbit hole trying to look at this idea of like, you know, how do you, you know, as a parent, like, or, you know, even talking to really successful parents or people that have successful kids, can you give me any kind of background or understanding of like how they got there? And the one thing that was universal to everybody is I provided opportunity. And, you know, it's kind of like the age old one where, I think Dan John gave me this analogy. He said, hey, you know, the best hammer thrower in the world, might live somewhere in the United States, but if you're not from Finland, you're probably never going to be exposed to the hammer.
Right.
And he's like, so you have to figure out, you know, what things you want to expose your child to, and, you know, and then hope that they have an aptitude. And he said that the greatness was just what did he call it? He called it genetics and geography. And one of the most enlightening talks I've had, I mean, and I've had like when we started our podcast, the Power Athlete Radio, I fucking hated it. I hated the idea of having to like get on and do this stuff. And like after we did a couple of them, I was like, oh my God, I get to have these really bitchin' meaningful conversations with my friends and then put them out there for everybody to hear. And it just helps me because I keep connecting with more and more people, you know, that are like-minded. And it's always cool when you meet somebody that is like so on your schedule where you're like talking about things and you're like, oh my God, you do that too? Or you believe this? And then you meet other people where you're like, fucking dude, we need to kill this guy. This guy's a fucking person. So we just had a guy on, Dr. Warren Wiley, Willie. And the guy, you know, wrote a book about 10 years ago that was pretty good that I wrote. And we were sitting there rapping just a little bit about nutrition. And it was like one of those things where we were talking and I was like, wait a minute, have we ever talked before? Are we friends? Because it was just, it was so spot on. And he just does some really cool shit with like, you know, being able to go in and assess people and, you know, body temperatures and just, you know, some stuff like kind of like things like Inkledon almost, where he just takes things to a whole nother level. So it's always enlightening to meet people like that are just really on the same kind of, you know, plane.
Right, right. Yeah. More and more my own podcast has become this thing where I'm just asking the guests questions that are really important to me and trying to tick that box to improve my own gig. And you know, people still seem to be enjoying it. Like I used to really sit down and I probably should like pause this thing as I admit this, but for a long time I was like, so what does everybody else want to know? And I'd try to weave that into the, you know, the Q&A and everything. And now I'm just kind of like, what do I want to know? But it,
if you don't find it important, who else is going to find it fucking important? You know, the funnier one is like, I remember one time we got some feedback from some guy that's like, you know, you guys fuck around too much. You guys had this, like, I think we had Rob McDonald on, and we were sitting there fucking bullshitting about, I think, like hamburgers. And, you know, like he has this like deal where I think he like posts like a steak of the day picture on his Instagram, and like just a super fucking cool cat. Like I've been meaning to go up and see Dr. Bueller up in Salt Lake City and like connecting with him. And it's just like, I'm like, how is it already fucking December? I was meaning to do that this summer. And, we got this like little fucking bitchy, you know, if I could find the guy's name, I had an email and fucking address, I'd drop it right now, but I can't find it. But the guy was like, you know, you have Rob McDonald on who holds the world record in like the 500-meter ski erg, and all you wanted to do was talk to him about steaks and hamburger. Shame on you. And this guy like admonished me in this fucking email. And I'm like, first of all, I didn't know he held the world record in the ski erg, and I didn't even know that was a thing. But like, I was fucking interested in all of it, like, you know, like his perception of the best burger at steak. And I'm like, I'm sorry that, you know, that wasn't interesting to you. And then we got other people that were like, oh my God, his fucking recommendations on burgers were so good. Then I'm like, see, that's my people. Want to get in here and talk about burgers.
It's so funny. Like if you, if I look at the analytics of like people subscribing to Twitter or podcasts, or, you know, even just the hate mail versus love mail, if you get something that resonates, I've never had something where, like, the bigger the upside, there is a mirror image of downside, always. And it's so fascinating to me. Like, there's some, you know, subsets of the interwebs where even though, like, say, 90% of people are super stoked on the topic, or you really had a great connection with the guest, or, like, you know, the whatever the dialogue was fantastic, there will be a group of people that mirror that in the exact opposite direction, and they hate it. And it's completely fascinating to me. Like, I've long scratched my head over that, but I think it's some sort of like wave particle duality, creating matter, antimatter deal. Like, if there's a bunch of positive energy, there's got to be a few people that are just kind of poopy pants about something to kind of balance that out. So,
well, isn't it like the one of our favorite lines and this one, and you know, Uncle Dave always texts me to this, and I'm sure you've been on it, where he's like, some people just want to burn, watch it burn, Ronald, you know, which is a line from Backdraft. He's like, I think people just want to watch it burn. Like, you know, or the other one that drives me absolutely fucking crazy is I get people shoot me questions about the podcast that were answered in the podcast. So we had Ken Ford on, who to this, I'll just preface it with this. Rob, you are an extremely smart person and one of my favorite guests that I've ever had on our site.
I can't carry Ken Ford's underwear bag.
Holy fucking shit. That dude was on our podcast, and Denny, who's our, you know, kind of does the lead in for us, and you know, he like kind of like, you know, meets with the guests early and kind of make sure they're all like unfucked and like we can get them on. And so he literally sends me this email the night before on that we're gonna have Ken Ford on, and he's like in an utter fucking panic. Like, he's like, I can hear him stuttering on the email, and he's like, dude, he's like, I just started researching this guy, and like I'm really nervous. Like, you know, like, should I even be on this? And I told him, I'm like, dude, just do what you always do. Do the intro and hand it to me, and we'll just have a fucking great conversation. It'll be amazing. And sure enough, that's what he did. He did the intro. Hey, Dr. Ford, can you introduce yourself? And I was like, Doc, can you give your CV so that people can understand a little bit? He didn't say a word, and we had an amazing conversation. And like, we got done, and it was just this email like, that was fucking awesome. That was the best thing. Thank you so much. And I'm like, yeah, dude, that was by far one of the coolest people to connect with, and so fucking smart. Like, the coolest part is we started kind of dialoguing offline, and he uses the Compex. He's like, oh yeah, you know, motor unit recruitment, you know, deterioration. I mean, the same shit that we talk about, like using EMS and like, you know, the ketogenic diet, and like, you know, he knew, like, it was like one of those things where I was like driving home and I was like, dude, that was probably one of the smarter dudes I've ever met in my life. And oddly enough, he is looking at things for the same way that I look at things, which is, you know, made me feel good about myself. And then, like, I was like, man, and this guy is an advisor to NASA. So pretty much the smartest people in the world. And the joke we kept using is the one from Armageddon when he's like, you're NASA. You got the eyes sitting in rooms thinking shit up, and this is the best you got. You know, the Harry Stampler.
Right, right.
But fuck, dude, that guy was so fucking smart. So it's so cool. Fuck.
Yeah, Ken's an amazing guy. I forget exactly how we got linked up. Maybe Peter Attia introduced us. I don't actually remember, but we've had just lots and lots of email exchanges and talking about ketogenic diets. And it is interesting, you know, again, because I've been looking at all this stuff, you know, performance, health, longevity, part of that longevity piece, you know, what deteriorates on, you know, your brain, your physicality, your strength, and then also your endurance. And so it's been kind of interesting looking at all that stuff. You know, the research seems to indicate that really activating the big motor units, doing big movements, doing them explosively, like that's really a great way to maintain muscle mass and maintain the neurological integration of the muscle, maintaining mitochondrial density, doing some low intensity cardio, and also maybe doing some ketogenic diet. And then, you know, for the brain maintenance, you know. And so when this guy with a PhD in computer science who runs the Institute of Human and Machine Cognition and who builds, you know, he basically runs a program where they build robots that fight in karate tournaments against each other and, you know, does a bunch of DARPA-funded ketogenic diet research for traumatic brain injury. And if the guy is saying, you know, he's doing essentially what we're doing, then it's kind of like, okay, maybe we're not morons.
well, the so, you know, the there's a kind of a weird love hate that people, or let me see, there's a lot of misconceptions and a lot of issues with the keto stuff. And I think where people really fuck it up is, you know, and I'll get back into that, but my first experience, and I don't know the people listening, but I know you know this, was working with Dr. DePasquale in 2000 when I, you know, was a rookie in the NFL. My first supplement deal was with Dr. D's supplement company. So I get all these supplements in boxes. I get this anabolic diet. So I'm flipping through it, and I had a consult. And, you know, he's like, well, what do you want to do? And I was like, well, doc, you know, I want to, you know, fucking be big, strong, and jacked, and I want my performance to go through the roof. And he's like, all right, well, let's do some anabolic diet. And so I read through everything. He programmed out the diet, and I did it. And I think I was right around 300 pounds. And, you know, I was probably like 18-20% body fat, just like a big, college lineman. And then I remember that off season, I was like 330 and change. And like my strength was through the fucking roof. I put on easily like 20 pounds. I think it was like 305, 310, somewhere in there. And all of a sudden I was 330 and I put on 20 pounds and I was fucking so big and strong. And I remember calling Doc and I was like, Doc, I feel great, but I'm not very fast. I got to drop some weight. And he's like, no problem. Here's how I want you to tweak the diet. And he put all the tweaks in. And like 8 weeks later, I was down to like, I think I was like 306, 307. And I had maintained all my muscle mass and like reshaped my body. And all of a sudden I was like 10, 11% body fat. And I like went up and I started, and that's where I played it for the rest of my career. And I always used some form of cyclical ketogenic diet. But it, you know, and like, you know, when I needed more carb, I used more carb. When I was feeling down, you know, how I didn't, and it was this whole kind of earn your carbs deal. And, you know, and then, you know, and then I had kind of worked with some, you know, looking at some bodybuilding stuff, and I had found that, you know, I could handle a certain amount of carbohydrate, and too much, I kind of bloated out and I got tired. And, you know, it just was that was really my first entree into it. And then when I retired from the NFL, you know, and I had some brain damage, of course, as all most NFL players do. And it was really that ketogenic diet that kind of went in and I think restructured. And you and I had that conversation offline where you were like, I think you were having some problems. Then you came out the other side of that and I felt like you got better on it. And, you know, and so I think the ketogenic diet is very important and very, you know, like, you know, has its place and is a very specific tool and has a very specific usage. Is it what I would call like a glycolytic performance diet? Are you going to be able to go and run, you know, 800 meter repeats or do CrossFit on a ketogenic diet? I just haven't seen that. But like in terms of like, you know, that kind of ATP, short duration, big horsepower kind of athlete, I think it works really well. And even, you know, Dr. Ford made a great comment to me. He said, you know, the single worst thing you can do after traumatic brain injury is dose somebody with a high amount of carbohydrate.
Right.
And I was like, oh, really? And he's like, kind of like in the NFL. I never figured out why they were giving you guys Gatorade when you guys are ramming each other's heads. You know, you're ramming your heads into each other, which is, you know, traumatic brain injury. And then they come on the side and dose you with Gatorade. And he's like, that's probably you could draw a connection between a lot of the problems that the NFL players are having with CTE and a lot of the traumatic brain associated with when they started providing Gatorade into, you know, a practice kind of hitting session. And like, I sat back and I was like, Doc, you know, I never drank the Gatorade. It always made my legs feel sluggish. And he's like, well, probably because, you know, it would kick up your blood sugar too high and blood would coagulate and slow you down. And I was like, yeah, I just never drank it. I always drank water. I never really liked the Gatorade. And he's like, makes total sense. And, you know, and it's, you know, it's pretty interesting. I had lunch the other day with Kyle Turley, who was one of my teammates, and Kyle's been in the news a lot because he was having some real severe, you know, got diagnosed with some pretty severe problems. And he ended up finding that there was some hemp, strains of hemp mm-hmm. that actually helped cure his problem. And so he moved out here to California and he's got involved with kind of the medical marijuana deal. And so he came out the other day and we were rapping a little bit about it. And he's like, man, you don't seem to have the same problems. And I'm like, dude, fucking let me give you Ken Ford's number. Call him. You got to get on the, you know, you got to start using this ketogenic diet. And, you know, we've talked about it for performance. I mean, you know, we did our version of the anabolic for our Jack Street stuff and ended up getting down to like 7% body fat at 268 and won that bet. And, it's worked, I think, really, really well. But in terms of like, you know, how to do it. And, you know, and this is really was the big kind of push between us putting out these nutrition programs that we have on Field Strong. We actually launched them today was, there was really nobody that was providing information and counseling and coaching and really kind of helping people with ketogenic diets. And I looked like there's really no spreadsheets, no templates, no nothing to kind of help you skin it and really like no resource and being like, hey, if you want to do a ketogenic diet, here's how you do it. And so we ended up putting them out for a ketogenic diet. And then my biggest question I get from people is like, how do I put on muscle? How do I bulk up? How do I lean out? And then if I'm eating for performance. So we launched all those templates programs today. And, you know, it was just more like meeting a need. And the one that was just most kind of interesting to me is how few people have ever really done any form of ketogenic or kind of low carb or kind of not, I won't even say low carb, but just really that kind of ketogenic. Cause you meet people that are low carb, but they're not really ketogenic. Like, right. Oh, I eat, you know, 7,500 grams, which could be considered low carb, but like that deep keto where, you know, you got to throw out your shirt every 3 weeks cause it smells like ammonia or like you walk around thinking, fuck, did I brush my teeth today? Or that kind of weird clarity where all of a sudden you hit it and you're like, oh shit, this is, you know, this is what this feels like where you get that weird clarity. So we've tried to coach people into it. And the one thing that we found is that a lot of people have these either emotional breakdowns or they have like tremendous problems with sleep. So that's kind of the ones we're flying out. And I actually talked to Dr. Ford about it. And he thought that the lack of sleep had to do more with some form of damage in the hypothalamus. And he said the emotional thing is just severe carb addiction or associating carbs with some form of like happiness, whether it be birthday cake as a child. Because I meet people all the time that were like, I stopped eating carbs. My whole life was coming down. I was hiding underneath my desk crying and weeping. And he's like, those people have deeper emotional problems. So it's pretty interesting, you know, yeah. Like I, you know, but yeah, we just, you know, what was pretty fascinating, and I think for a long time, we really just focused on the training and we really made these kind of like recommendations like, hey, I want you to eat real foods and I want you to do this and this. And, you know, you've done great with just, hey, you know, these are the foods I want you to eat. And, you know, and I want you to avoid these and just keep these. And I think for a lot of people, that's pretty easy. But I've just, in the last bunch of years we've been doing this, I think there's just people that just need like a little bit more hand holding. And, you know, what's been good is that we've been able to go out and find out and reach out to some people that are better at that. Cause you and I are not great at hand holding. So.
Right. Right. Yeah. Yeah. And you've come on to a few good hand holders. Tyler Minton is a fantastic kid. He basically did like the Fight Club deal to gain some access to me. Like that kid hounded me. And finally I was like, okay, I guess you're not just some flighty dude. And
well, and you're
investing
like,
some time into him. So
you're like, and you're also not going away. So fuck.
Right, yeah, I'm like, well, if you're going to keep pestering me, I guess I might as well start mentoring you a little bit. So yeah, you know, but I shot a paper to you today that came out in Cell maybe a week ago. And there's some pretty good buzz, like the decent news, you know, treatment around it, talking about the personalized nutrition, basically, and that these folks had vastly different blood sugar responses based off its type of food that they ate. Like there was a great graphic in this one thing. They just found two different patients that were in these cohorts, and each of them ate a banana and a cookie. One of them, the banana made their blood glucose go through the ceiling. The other one, the cookie, made the blood glucose go through the ceiling. And then I shared that on my Facebook page. And Aaron Blasdale, who runs the Ancestral Health Society, he made the point that, you know, if you were to finish out your 2x2 matrix on that, there would also be someone that had high blood glucose due to both of those, and somebody would have low blood glucose due to both of them. And so what, you know, more and more as time has gone on, the battle that I've had is trying to get people heuristics, like these simple rules that, you know, get you as far down the road as possible. But then at some point, the customization becomes critical. I mean, it becomes almost everything. You know, people are fiddling with gluten-free, they're fiddling with paleo, but, you know, do they need a lot of carbs, few carbs? Do they need a lot of carbs post-workout, but not otherwise? You know, I mean, there's a lot of different ways to skin things, and it takes kind of a studied clinician to be able to look at the person, see how they're responding, and then make a good recommendation about where folks need to go next. And that seems like what you guys are doing with this.
Well, the yes and no. I mean, the hard thing is everybody wants a one size fits all. Everybody wants a definitive, like, hey, if I, you know, in my post-workout window where, you know, I want to ramp up blood sugar and increase insulin to, you know, shuttle nutrients to the cell and increase recovery, then I want to, you know, eat this. But you're actually right. We don't really know how responsive we are to what type of carbohydrate load or what necessarily you're getting any type of response. And that was, you know, pretty cool. And you shot me. I mean, I remember we had that conversation. I want to say it was like 2004, 2005. I was, you know, had a pretty good chat with Inkledon, and he had I don't know if he ever told you, but you got to ask him. He had a deal where he trained a guy for his doctorate. He was at Arizona State doing his doctorate on an exercise phys, and his research project was to train a bodybuilder all natural to win a professional bodybuilding competition against drug users. And so they ended up training a guy who went in, and I think he won the night of champions. And he was drug-free competing against the drug guys and actually ended up going in there and winning it. And I remember talking to Tom about it, and they would go in there and do daily blood work on him. They would check his blood sugar. They basically tested his blood sugar. They had stents in him. They were taking androgens, you know, blood, everything during his training, so they knew that all of a sudden when his testosterone peaked that they would, you know, do training. I mean, they literally used every piece of equipment that they had in the exercise phys doctorate program to train this dude, and they ended up getting him in, and the guy ended up doing, I think he won. And so I asked Tom, I was like, well, what'd you do? He said, you know, the biggest one that they found is that when testing is, they would basically test him with different foods, and they would find the foods that he could eat, and then they found a whole bunch of different little tricks to keep his blood sugar under 80. And if they could get him to eat, and they would get him to train, and they never got his blood sugar over 80, he would never put on an ounce of fat. And so Tom went through all this stuff, all this blood work, everything they did, and, like, you know, they found all these supplements to maximize different stuff. And so I was like, well, was it pretty amazing? He goes, it was. And he goes, we were so proud when we stood up there. And then he goes, and then I see his parents come walking up, and his dad walks over and shakes my hand, and I look at his dad, and his dad had calves that were, like, bigger than his son's, and the dad was actually looked like he was about 2 weeks out from winning the bodybuilding show that his son just looked that his son just won. And he goes, I literally deflated into, like, a little tiny, like, he's like, I was like, oh, boo, when he realized that the kid had incredible genetics. They just had to provide him the environment, and they thought that they had done all this. But he's like, dude, the dad was a genetic freak. This guy was a genetic freak. We just had to kind of polish it up a little bit. But, you know, and then at that point, I ended up getting a glucose meter and, you know, kind of using some of Tom's tricks. And sure enough, if I could do some stuff to, you know, keep my blood sugar real low when I was eating, it was actually really beneficial for me to put on size and muscle and strength. And I remember one time I got gluten, or I can't remember what I ate. Either it was gluten or it was something funky in the food. And I tested my blood sugar, and it was like a 140. And I, like, freaked out, and I had an Aerodyne at my house, and I literally would just jump on the Aerodyne, and I would just ride it for like 15, 20 minutes, and I'd test my blood sugar again, and it literally dropped it down, which is that non-mediated glucose uptake, which helps drop blood sugar, if it spikes real bad, right. And we use that with diabetic patients. So, some things like that, and that worked really well. But it's kind of interesting. I mean, the problem is like we always joke that everybody's the same decaying matter, and it's just not the case. We went pretty extensive into the genetic testing with fitness genes, and it was pretty interesting to look at kind of the arrangement. And it's not just and this is where people get fucked up on the genes. It's just not a 1-to-1. Like, hey, if I'm an RR for an ACE gene, or if I'm PPAR or all these different ones, they look at like, well, I have this gene. And it's like, actually, it's the combination of all those genes. And the reason that we ended up working with the fitness genes guys is that their chief scientist is one of the guys that works in the Oxford genetics lab. And so when I kind of had a good chat with them about how they really sequence these, and the guy was like, we just show you 1-to-1, but it's actually this whole sequencing that gives us some information about who you are. And he's like, based on this, you're extreme. And this was me personally. He's like, you're extremely, efficient with your carbohydrate use. And I was like, efficient? What does that mean? He's like, well, you get less out of more, you get more, your body's more sensitive to carbohydrates, so you don't need as much as somebody who, like Luke, for example, whose body was very inefficient at carbohydrate. So when we went back and designed some diets based off of Dan Reardon, who's a doctor, who's a guy from Fitness Genes, we started kind of designing diets, some protocols based on what they outlined for us. And it just so happened that, like, what in terms of how the ketogenic and even the cyclical AD diet worked for me was actually fell totally within what they had told me is my genetic type. And then for Luke, I just ended up titrating up his carbohydrate until, and kind of dropping his fat and kind of playing with his protein until he leaned out and fucking looks like a rock star. So it really wasn't that difficult, as long as we're playing with the information. The problem is that, what people do for diet is they get on the internet, they pick somebody that they want to look like, and they figure like, oh, well, if Paige Hathaway or this guy looks like this, if I follow their diet, I will look like this. And this is not the fucking case, because one, you don't know what drugs they're taking. You don't know if that was a modeling shoot on a specific day where they've dehydrated for 3 days. You don't know, like, if that was good lighting, airbrushing, all these other things. And, and what's working for one person isn't going to work for that other person. You might hit that 1-for-1, but for the other 5 people, it's not going to work. So really just being able to provide training and nutrition that's kind of flexible. So kind of what we do is we start everybody in the same place, which is like an isocaloric, which is just basically cut everything into thirds and, try to figure out what their macronutrient ratio looks like with the thirds. And then we try to figure out what the total caloric load is. And then we just kind of work backwards. And then, at that point, you just got to fine tune it, because some people run a little bit better on a little more carb. The one thing I've never really ever seen, which is pretty interesting, is I've never really seen anybody make physical, almost like increases in muscle mass and kind of physical appearance off of like excessive amounts of protein. But I've seen people have really shitty results off of not eating enough protein. So that like 1 gram to 1.5 grams of protein is pretty ideal. And then how much fat people can run. Like for me, all my genetic stuff, I was extremely non-reactive and actually processed fats really well. But then he showed me another person who didn't process fat well. And so I asked him, I was like, well, what do you do? He's like, well, if they don't process fat well, we kind of naturally ramp it down and increase the carbohydrate and kind of play with their macronutrients based on what their body can handle. And it was just pretty interesting. I mean, so much so I went and I got my girls tested and I got my wife tested, and trying to get some 3-year-olds to spit in some cups to do genetic testing was funny. But, even for my girls, it was pretty interesting. Like I think my one daughter is, has the gene for like muscle size and muscle strength, which means that as she gets bigger, she gets more muscular. Where my other daughter has the deal where if she gets bigger, she doesn't necessarily get stronger, which I thought was pretty fascinating, because I always believed that a larger cross-sectional size of a muscle should theoretically make somebody stronger. But genetically, and we run into this all the time. I'm sure you've seen guys, Rob, that haven't put on a pound in years, but all of a sudden they're like twice as strong as they used to be.
Right.
And, that's definitely genetic. It's just like, for me, like the bigger I get, the stronger I get. Well, that's based on my genotype. So there was just some really, really fascinating stuff with the genes. And I think what we're kind of getting to right now is this kind of land where, you know, you're going to, you know, start kind of like pairing up. And I know it sounds crazy, but like this idea of like, hey, you know, I'm going to find some type of training that kind of fits within my genetic type. And I'm going to do some blood work to try to kind of maximize some other things. I'm going to find a style of eating that kind of fits within this kind of grand scheme. And then I'm going to start at step one and I'm going to start training. I'm going to start eating and I'm going to start tinkering until I can kind of figure out exactly who I need to be, or more importantly, helps me be the best version of me.
Yeah, I could not agree more. Getting the genetic testing, the microbiome testing, and then correlating that all with general performance, and then also you know, what's happening with biomarkers. Like, that's really going to be the interesting integration. We've been working like crazy with the City Zero gig, and our initial foray is going to be more on the blood work biomarkers. But, you know, we're talking already about who we partner with for gut, you know, microbiome testing. Who do we partner with? You know, like the fitness genes actually look really interesting, and being able to start integrating all that, pretty similar actually to the way that they did in that Cell paper. And then, you know, that might provide some insight so that we can algorithmically, you know, the problem with all this stuff, and we talked about this briefly before we started recording, trying to help people with these things. You have a limited amount of time. So you get someone like you get someone like me, lots of people that are pretty knowledgeable on this stuff, but you've got, you know, 24 hours in a day, and you have people that need help. And to the degree that you can figure out a way to algorithmize this whole process, then it's not just a heuristic. It's not just a one size fits all approach. It's actually a sorting process where you can get some customized information to the person that really is actionable. And then we, you know, like in a good experiment, you tweak variables, go apply those things, tweak the diet, tweak the sleep, see what the results are, and then keep fiddling from there. But it's pretty exciting.
Yeah, no, I mean, it's we're at a point, I think, where you know, the science is advanced enough to tell us almost how dumb we are. Like that's the thing I laugh about is you know, and periodically this happens. You know, if I ever see anything on Facebook about T Nation, it's usually something rehashed from like 20 years ago that either somebody went back and read something and they want to rehash it, or they're just rewriting other people's information from a while ago. But, you know, the more and more advanced we get, the more and more do I realize that, you know, we fucking probably figured it out about 100 years ago.
Right.
You know, the idea of like, hey, I want to, you know, train with some progression. I need to do a little bit of body weight movement. I need to run. I mean, you know, the classic one is when we talked to Tom Furman, and he was talking a little bit about, you know, his uncle or Charlie Bronson and his training. He like hit the heavy bag. He ran. He lifted weights. He, you know, he always ate one bite less than he wanted to. I mean, just these like super basic stuff, and you know, was just kind of like kind of gritty and kind of just. You know, worked his ass off and always stayed in shape and never let himself get out of shape. There was no bulking and leaning. And even though we run into that all the time, the guy was always in shape. There was never a point where he was out of shape. And I think like the more and more we get into this, the more and more like I take a look back and realize like those fucking guys hadn't figured out, man. They knew a lot about what was going on. And, you know, it just seems like the more jiggy we get and the more information, the more I realize, just kind of like, you know, Inklet on 10 years ago was talking to me about blood work. And here you send me something today where these guys are like, we have a great thing. We got to keep insulin, you know, blood sugar low.
Right.
And it's like, you know, it's pretty fascinating. I mean, for me especially, you know, when I was a young kid training in Zangus' garage, he used to always talk about Vince Guaranda's Stone Age diet. And, you know, it was a paleo diet with raw milk. And, you know, he didn't tell us that they were also taking handfuls of Dianabol, but
details.
Details. But Zangus always talked about it. And we'd go out and eat, and he'd always talk about these guys. And, you know, this is how you got to eat. You got to eat big. And, you know, Bill Kazmaier driving around in his Cadillac with a blender and an ice chest, you know, stopping everywhere he stopped. He'd make himself a shake. And, you know, it's pretty interesting. I mean, the one thing, though, and, you know, having done some of this nutrition stuff and, you know, working with the spreadsheets and kind of doing some consults, we get either kind of two types of people. We either get really, really bad chronic under-eaters that are, you know, and are real lunchy, like they pack a lot of body fat, they're really trying to get here, their performances suck, their food sucks, and they're just terrible under-eaters because in their mind they're thinking, well, I'm not in good shape. If I eat less, eventually I'll get better. And it fucking never happens. So, I mean, I was amazed at just talking to some people and asking them to track macros or just even the caloric load for like a week and being like, dude, you are a 200-pound man and you ate 1,200 calories. Like, you know, and so that, and then what happens is then they undereat and then they pick a day and they fucking binge. Well, yeah, you know, I was eating 1,200 calories, but I went out and ate a bunch of big meals on Saturday. And I'm like, so you guys are in this like supermodel deal where they, you know, they undereat and then you binge. But you don't throw up like a supermodel, so eventually it just kind of goes to your gut. And so that was pretty interesting. Or the other one is people just have no kind of ability to kind of, you know, almost, you know, realize that the most important meals are really around that post-workout. You know, oh, well, you know, I got home, I didn't have time to eat, so it was like 4 hours after my post-workout meal, and it's that I got something to eat, and I only ate some nuts. And I'm like, man, you guys are killing yourself. Like, you know, with this nutrition, especially training, I'm like the king of low-hanging fruit. Like, you know, how, you know, what's going to help us maximize your performance the most? All right, great. Let's like, you know, let's get some to eat. If you want to take some inner workout stuff, if, you know, get you a post-workout meal and try to figure out how to kind of ramp everything up. But for the most part, like, you just got to actually sit down and actually consume something. This idea of like not eating is just kind of blows my mind. So that's really the one that's kind of lit me up the most and really surprised me is how many chronic under-eaters I've really run into, which seems counterintuitive.
You know, I got to say, and I've talked about this on earlier podcasts, like generally eating kind of paleo-esque food, it's actually pretty satiating. And I think that it's reasonably easy to get into a spot where you are kind of under eating. Like it's satiating enough that you could get yourself into a bad spot with that. So for me, it's not that surprising. Like I fell into that for sure.
Oh, with the under eating, you fell in. Yeah, well, I guess it's kind of like, well, the other one too is, and you and I laugh about this. It's about 5 or 6 years ago, and I keep waiting for it to come back. Everybody was fucking all up on this fasting deal, like, oh, you know, the intermittent fasting and this, and I remember like people were trying to convince me that you know that fasting was actually a performance way of eating, and I'm like, no, fasting is not a performance way of eating. Like, if you want to improve some blood sugar markers, like there's some definite real cool like life extensions and some interesting stuff with fasting, but you can't tell me that 18 hours a day of intermittent fasting and you're PRing all your Fran and Diane and Grace times, that just doesn't fucking happen,
right?
And I think we ran into that a little bit too, and it's like, you know, and like, you know, they were like, well, how does that make sense? And I'm like, all right, so you fasted for 18 hours. That means you got 6 hours to consume your calories. I assume that, you know, 6 or 7 of those hours will be sleeping. And like, are you telling me that you can consume the same amount of calories that you're going to eat in, let's say, 12 hours? And they were like, oh, no. And I'm like, well, then technically fasting is just a form of calorie restriction. That if that's the case, then just fucking call it calorie restriction. And, you know, and I've never seen people really make great, you know, fucking either performance or even body composition changes from drastically reducing calories. I mean, if anything, I rather like, I mean, and I remember, you know, Inkledon and I had this conversation years ago where he's like, honestly, I rather just increase somebody's amount of training time than actually take away their calories. Given the opportunity, I find that if you can let somebody eat, you know, to a good amount and just train them more, you know, whether it be some, you know, aerobic work or steady state HIIT, I mean, whatever you want to throw at them, that's always going to be a you know, my first go-to before pulling calories out of somebody's diet. Because, you know, I mean, unless they're just a terrible chronic overeater. So, you know, and I always looked at it like, well, you know what, you got to go earn your food. And at the end of the day, if like, I need to, you know, fucking trim up or I got to do something, I'm just going to increase the workload. Whereas other people counterintuitively, well, if I just reduce calories and keep training the same, I should eventually get there when it doesn't fucking work.
Right, right. Oh, interesting. Well, John, I know you have a family to go to. I've got a family to go to. Remind folks where they can track you down on the interwebs and then also how to track down the new nutrition portal.
All right. I'll drop all these. I actually just, before we jumped on, put some codes together for the listeners if they want to, you know, extend out those, you know, Black Friday, you know, Cyber Monday sales. So the ebook, which is the Talk to Me Johnny ebook, which is packed full of not only knowledge and information, but quite a bit of humor. So if you use the code ROB, R-O-B-B, all one word, you'll get 20% off that. And then also, if you're interested in trying our nutrition templates, You can use the code Rob on checkout as well, and you can find those at powerathletehq.com/nutrition. And for those of you guys that are, you know, trying to get in shape with some form of leaning, also trying to put on muscle with a bulking, or just looking at performance, or interested in a ketogenic diet, we're doing some programming and also some spreadsheets, some templates for the ketogenic and all these. And even though we use the keto for one, there's some, you know, everything kind of revolves around some secular low carb and carb and doing some zigzag dieting, which, you know, Rob knows about with Doc Hatfield. So, you know, those are pretty interesting. We've got great results with our private clients, so we decided to launch them out and use them with the masses. And then also, if you're interested in doing some training with us, you can find us at Power Athlete HQ. We've got three different programs, which would be Field Strong, which is our performance one, which you can use Rob, R-O-B-B-F-S. And you can also try our Jack Street, which is our bodybuilding program, which is Rob at JS, and then also Rob GS for our grindstone. So, I mean, we got a lot of stuff out there, but it's really just kind of, we all started with just kind of one thing, and then as kind of things evolved, we just started adding stuff. And next thing I know, as I'm saying this, I'm like, God damn, we got a lot of shit out there.
Yes, you guys do.
Well, it's weird. Like, we get so much good user feedback from people that we just kind of end up just kind of adding some stuff and being like, you know what? Like, hey, could I get a, you know, like you, like, hey, I want to be good at jiu-jitsu. I don't have many days to train. It's like, well, you know what? Like, everybody should have an opportunity. You shouldn't be turned away from a program or a training just because you can't meet the demand of it. You know, if you don't have 3 hours a day to train 5 days a week, you still need to get your training in. So we just try to put some stuff out there and provide as much support as we can through our forums and on Facebook and social media. And the idea is, man, you're not in this fight alone. And, we're definitely there with you and want you to try to meet all your goals. And so we're there to help you.
Awesome. Well, John, thanks for coming on. And I'm looking forward to seeing you at the Power Athlete Symposium in 2 weeks.
I'm looking forward to it. We're going to have a great time and got some good speakers and definitely have some laughs as usual.
Guaranteed. All right, man. Thanks for coming on, and I'll talk to you soon.
Thanks, Rob.
Okay. Bye-bye.